It's the Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Republicans in the state legislature want voters to approve referenda that would expand voter ID requirements, and one would limit vote by mail, something the party largely approved in 2019. We're going to discuss the apparent about-face with Associated Press reporter Mark Levy. Mark, welcome back to the Confluence.
Thanks for having me here.
Mark, Republican Seth Grove is sponsoring a bill that would give counties extra time they asked for to prepare and process mail-in ballots. But Governor Wolf has called the overall measure an extremist proposal, said he'd veto any bill with tougher voter ID requirements. So Republicans have proposed legislation for a constitutional amendment. What would it do?
So there is one particular bill like that in the Senate that would require a voter every time they vote in person to show identification. And if you're voting by mail, you would have to put a photocopy of your identification into the envelope with your ballot and mail it in. And both of those represent an expansion of the state's voter ID requirement. Of course, what the bill doesn't do, this proposed constitutional amendment, is it does not prescribe what identification qualifies as a legitimate identification. So the state currently has a law. If you're voting in person, you have to show your identification the first time you vote at your polling place. And there's a list of about 14 different examples that are acceptable. If you're voting by mail, the state requires you to provide your driver's license number or the last four numbers of your Social Security number when you are applying for the ballot.
So Republicans want voters to overturn a law that they actually approved? Is that a fair assessment?
The photo ID requirement is much longer lasting than the 2019 mail-in voting laws. So in 2019, Republicans were nearly unanimous in dramatically expanding the ability to vote by mail. That bill didn't necessarily expand the state's photo ID requirement. It did contain a certain ID requirement for getting a mail-in ballot. But what they're talking about now would certainly expand photo ID requirements or voter ID requirements.
Their argument in part regarding the 2019 vote by mail legislation is that then Secretary of State Kathy Buchvar interpreted the law in a much broader sense than what was intended, at least by the Republican lawmakers who voted for it.
So they're unhappy with a number of things and how the courts and the Department of State interpreted the law. But the fact of the matter is a couple of examples are counties helping people fix technical problems with their mail-in ballots so that their ballots would count, or counties wanting to put drop boxes out. What lawmakers said is that, well, we didn't explicitly authorize that in the law. But where they're wrong is that you don't necessarily need to explicitly authorize something in a law for it to be legal. There's no case law. There's nothing in the law that says if the state didn't explicitly authorize it, then it's illegal. So what they're doing now is trying to put restrictions on, you know, how counties help voters and how counties can use drop boxes. Those are a couple examples.
Why do Republicans think that these proposals to amend the Constitution might work? That voters, if it ever gets to the ballot, would okay their idea?
Two things, Kevin. Historically speaking, voters approve ballot questions. So the last time voters disapproved a ballot question was 1993. Number two, they point to one particular poll that was done by the Associated Press maybe last year, in which we asked voters, do you support photo ID requirements for voters? And by more than 70%, people said yes.
And they're coming off a victory in May's primary election regarding the use of the governor's emergency declaration power.
That's right. That was an example of something going to the ballot, which was very highly partisan. And it shows in the results. It was approved by less than 4 percentage points, both of the questions they sought to limit the governor's powers on disaster declarations. And so Democrats see Republicans being emboldened by that and now taking a path in which they're going to see about making laws by amending the Constitution, which historically is extremely unusual.
Are there limits what can be an amendment? Can the constitutionality of an amendment be challenged later on? In other words, can there be another constitutional amendment to amend a previous one that was adopted?
You can certainly re-amend the Constitution later on. Bruce Ledowitz, the law professor at Duquesne University, said, you know, you can amend the Constitution. You can put anything in the Constitution you want. The problem is that if you want to change it later, if you decide there's a problem with it or things change, you have to go through the process of amending the Constitution. But it's a long process, and typically changing the law can be, you know, done much more swiftly. It's one bill through two chambers and the signature by the governor. And what Bruce Ledowitz says is that the Constitution was really meant for broad principles of how we conduct ourselves, and the law is meant for more the granular implementation of Constitution.
And finally, you mentioned it is a long process. So it looks like if it passes both chambers, it has to be done in two consecutive legislative sessions, as you said. It seems like the earliest this could go to the voters is May or maybe November of 2023, but that would still be in time for the next presidential election.
That's right. So it would be May of 2023 is the earliest that it could get to the ballot. This voter ID requirement, it would still require a floor vote in the Senate and a floor vote in the House. And then they'd have to repeat that process in early 2023.
Mark Levy is a longtime reporter for the Associated Press. Thanks for your reporting, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. For the first time, Pittsburgh is celebrating June 19th, or Juneteenth, as an official city holiday. There's a celebration taking place this weekend. Here to tell us more about what's happening in Pittsburgh and its significance is one of the organizers, William Marshall. He's also the CEO of Stop the Violence Pittsburgh. Welcome to The Confluence.
Oh, I'm so glad to be a part of this show today. You just don't know.
We're catching you as you're actually setting up for the celebration at the Point. Before we talk about the festivities, the U.S. Senate unanimously passed a resolution Tuesday establishing June 19th as Juneteenth National Independence Day, a federal holiday commemorating the end of slavery in the U.S. That measure now goes to the House. What's your reaction about this federal action?
Oh, we think it's long overdue. We think that we've been pushing for this for the last 20 years. It's a gentleman named Doc from Mississippi who actually started the initiative. He ended up passing away last year, so he's not going to be able to see the fruits of his rewards because he was the one that started the initiative about 20 years ago to make Juneteenth a federal holiday.
Mm-hmm. For those who aren't familiar with the history, it was June 19th, 1865, that Major General Gordon Granger announced in Galveston, Texas, the end of slavery in accordance with President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. Do you feel that more and more people are gaining awareness, getting a better understanding about the significance of Juneteenth, maybe even each year?
Yeah, each year is kind of growing. For example, we've been doing the Juneteenth celebration since 2013 in the city of Pittsburgh. And I can remember we started off with 35 people. In 2019, we had about 25,000 people at Point State Park for our celebration. 2020 was the COVID hit. You know, we couldn't do anything live. But every year is getting more awareness. And actually, I want to say this. It was Donald Trump who gave us a great boost in 2020. By denigrating Juneteenth, but making people aware of the fact that Juneteenth is a significant holiday, and they start to investigate it and look at it and understand it. Mm-hmm. You really have to really understand the significance of the holiday because people try to equate it with the 4th of July. But during the 4th of July in 1776, America held black people in slavery. So we didn't become independent or gain our freedom to 1865. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that people recognize Juneteenth for a holiday it is, and it is a product of the Civil War. So Juneteenth became into effect because of the Civil War, where whites and blacks died for this holiday. So when people ask me about the holiday, I always tell them it's an American holiday sometimes we have the misunderstanding that this is a black holiday when in fact it is an American holiday. It's America's second Independence Day.
Did the protests against racial injustice last summer have an impact of getting things moving forward?
Yeah, because even the people that were protesting really didn't understand Juneteenth. And it gave us a big boost. And then with the federal government now about to make it a federal holiday, this will become more significant in the future.
Mm-hmm. William, you have been coordinating celebrations of Juneteenth for several years. How do you personally feel about it being a City of Pittsburgh official holiday for the first time this year?
We worked with the city council and the mayor's office to make it a holiday. And in fact, the City of Pittsburgh became the first city in Pennsylvania to actually make it a legalized holiday. And Allegheny County is the same. It was very significant to us that we were the first in Pennsylvania to be able to accomplish that feat.
Mm-hmm. Although Juneteenth is one day, the festivities here in Pittsburgh are not limited to one day or any one location. As I mentioned, we're catching up with you at Point State Park. There's a celebration there Friday through Sunday. What's going to be going on?
We'll have speakers and vendors. We're also having a minority vendor plaza that's going to be on Liberty Avenue, where we're trying to create an economic impact for our black vendors who have been messed up during the time of COVID, basically. This celebration is actually our Juneteenth and Black Music Festival. That's why it's more than one day, mm-hmm. because June is actually Black Music Month. So we're bringing in some national entertainment. We're bringing in Ohio Players. We're bringing in the B.B. King Blues Band. It's B.B. King's original band. And I think his daughter, his son, sings the songs. So we're having a great event down here for the whole week through June 18th through the 20th. Then we come right back on the 24th through the 27th.
Mm-hmm. There's also the Youth Festival at Mellon Park. That's in Shadyside. Younger Pittsburghers sort of led the way during last summer's protests. Do you feel that they are engaged when it comes to Juneteenth?
Yeah, a lot of the protesters are engaged when it comes to Juneteenth, and a lot of them are constant and aware of Juneteenth. Yeah, the event at Mellon Park is going to be significant. That'll be the first time that we'll be able to do something for our youth. So we're going to have a lot of activities for the youth. It's going to be flag football at Mellon Park. We're going to have a youth zone where we'll give away different items for the youth. That activity will be going from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. daily, June 18th through the 20th.
Mm-hmm. Now, those are a lot of fun events that you just mentioned, but how do you still incorporate the message of Juneteenth to the young folks?
So along with that, all the activities that we have out there, we have a grandma and grandpa carnival event where they're going to be teaching children about the significance of Juneteenth and African American history.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that young people want to have a good grasp of history? We are talking, 100, nearly 60 years ago about the original Juneteenth. Do you think, they don't want to be involved in history, they just want to be involved in the present?
So actually, we have a African-American student educational program that we do every February for Black History Month, where we have over 1,000 students from 13 different districts in this Allegheny County that come to this program. And what we teach them is about African-American history, about Juneteenth, about slavery, about significant people that was in this area. And that has grown each year. We started that in 2018. We started about 200 students. 2020, we were able to get it off before the pandemic, and we had over 1,000 students. So, yes, students are very interested in learning history, because what I'm learning is, and what I'm finding out, is they're not finding it, they're not getting it in their high school.
Mm-hmm. So what are you learning from the young people?
Well, what I'm learning from the young people is that they're energetic, they're involved, they're thirsty for this information. They want to know about their own history and their culture, and it's very significant to them.
Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh likes parades. There's also a parade, isn't there?
We've been doing the reenactment of the Jubilee of Freedmen Parade that was actually held here in 1870, which focused around voting rights for African Americans in the 15th Amendment. So when we found out about that parade that was here in the city of Pittsburgh that had over 5,000 people marching that parade, I did a lot of research and decided I wanted to try to bring that back. So we have our parade on June the 26th, where we'll start from Freedom Corner, which will run downtown, and then it'll go into Point State Park. And when we get to Point State Park, we're going to have a voter rights forum with different advocates for voting rights. But the parade will have youth groups. It'll have religious organizations. We have the United States military coming to march in the parade. We'll have reenactors, U.S. Color Guard reenactors marching in the parade. We'll have different frats and fraternities marching in the parade. So it's basically going to be a great event for the city. The parade runs from 11 o'clock to 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm. William, is June 19th also a sad day? I mean, Saturday is the third anniversary of the shooting death of an unarmed black teenager, Antoine Rose, by a then East Pittsburgh police officer.
That happened in 2018, and it kind of galvanized the community because a lot of the people that were involved in the protesting came to march in the parade on I think we did our parade on June 24th at that time. But it is a very sad occasion that we will not be able to get justice for the Rose family for that tragic murder to us. So, yeah, it is a sad occasion for us. I actually know Antoine Rose Sr., and he'll be participating in our parade this year in the Juneteenth celebration. Mm.
Finally, William, there are a variety of activities to celebrate the end of slavery. You mentioned earlier that Juneteenth is an American holiday. How do you make it more inclusive so that we all acknowledge the celebration's importance?
Yeah, one of the things that we do is we promote to everybody in the community, not just the African-American community. We try to get everybody to be involved in Juneteenth because, again, it is an American holiday based on the Civil War. So I go to all the festivals. I go to the Arts Festival. I go to the Bloomfield Festival. I don't discriminate about festivals. And we want everybody to feel welcome down here for the Juneteenth celebration. We want you to come down and enjoy the food, the music, and the vendors that's going to be down here. And I think that one of the reasons that the city supported Ed Gainey, because that was one of his messages about unifying the city as opposed to having us in one corner and somebody in another corner. And I think it's very important that we all come together collectively and to celebrate Juneteenth. This is a great event, and everybody loves culture and music. So it's not for African-American people. It's for everybody to come down here and enjoy yourself.
William Marshall is one of the organizers of the Juneteenth celebration in Pittsburgh. He's also the CEO of Stop the Violence Pittsburgh. William, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Rebecca Reese, Owen Trainer, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.